And so, as I said, today we continue with our series on the Book of Joy, Lasting Happiness in a Changing World. This book is based on conversations, as many of you know, among His Holiness, the 14th Dalai Lama, Archbishop Desmond Tutu, and author-interviewer Douglas Abrams, as they come together to celebrate the Dalai Lama's 80th birthday and to ask what gift they can give to the world. It's over, so I'm not. These two spiritual icons have experienced years of hardship and oppression in their own lives. The Archbishop, as we know, lived in South Africa during apartheid and was a leader there, and the Dalai Lama was forced to flee from his native country of Tibet and set up a nation in exile. But despite all of that, the two come together and the issue they decide to focus on is joy. With laughter, teasing, and humility, they show us that joy is not dependent on what happens to us. Joy is internal, the very essence of our being. Here are the two dancing at the Dalai Lama's 80th birthday party. Sorry about that. There they are. They certainly practice what they preach, do they not? The Dalai Lama said that's the first time in his life he had ever danced, so I love that. So as a result of their week together, the two spiritual leaders present eight pillars they consider to be the foundation of joy-filled living. And for those of you who are here for the first time and maybe missed some of these, they are divided into four what they call pillars of the mind, and they are perspective, humility, humor, and acceptance. And then there are four pillars of the heart. They are gratitude, forgiveness, compassion, and generosity. And today, we're going to focus on forgiveness. So, if I set this, I can walk away for a minute because I don't need it for a while. One of my favorite stories about forgiveness is one told about Leonardo da Vinci when he was painting The Last Supper in Milan. It seems that as he was painting, he had a bitter argument with a fellow painter, which led to him hating and despising the man. So he got this bright idea that he would take revenge by painting the face of Judas as his enemy. He took delight with every stroke, gleefully creating the face, knowing that whoever saw it for all eternity would think of Judas and connect him with his enemy. However, as he went back to work, for some reason he could not quite get the face of the other disciples right, and especially the face of Jesus. For the other disciples, he used live models, by the way, but he couldn't get the Jesus' face right. He struggled, and he couldn't figure out what was wrong, and finally it came to him. He was in a space of such hatred and resentment that his creative juices just would not flow. So he realized that he had to go and give forgiveness to the other painter, and that very night, the entire face of Jesus came to him in a dream, and he painted it in like a day. Now, honestly, I don't know if that story is true or myth, but I do know it holds great spiritual truths about forgiveness. So I love that story. Let's see. So, the practice of forgiveness has been advocated by spiritual leaders throughout the ages. I mean, from Buddha to Muhammad to Jesus and Martin Luther King. And an insight of the thinking of Jesus on the subject we can find in Matthew when Peter asked him, "Lord, how often shall my brother sin against me and I forgive him? Up to seven times?" And Jesus replies, I do not say to you up to seven times, but I say to you 70 times seven. When I was a kid in Sunday school, I always wondered where Jesus got those numbers, where they come from. You know, why wasn't it 10 times 10 or 10 times 100? So to understand this, though, we need to look at the historical context. Rabbis at the time taught that three times was the limit for human forgiveness. Three strikes and you're outlaw came from that. I don't know for sure. But the teaching that humans were not allowed to give a fourth time was based on an Old Testament belief that divine forgiveness was limited to four. Isn't it interesting how human beings limit the divine in our beliefs and our teachings? But at any rate, hence, a person, a human being, could not forgive more than God. Bible scholar Ed Townley says, Peter must have taken the rabbi's commandment, doubled it, and added one for good measure. Surely that would be enough. Maybe that's how he came up with it. At any rate, here is a depiction of the literal meaning of that, and the cartoon says, as you can clearly see by this ledger, you have been forgiven 490 times and are no longer covered under the biblical policy. To understand Jesus' meaning, however, we need to remember that the number 7 symbolizes completeness, and the number 70 symbolizes perfect spiritual power and order. So Jesus is just simply telling his disciples and us that there is no limit to our forgiveness, that forgiveness is a continual process, especially if we realize we are here to be God's expression on this earth. We have to be continually in that mindset to be able to forgive. Now, earlier in Matthew, we looked at this during the Sermon on the Mount series. Earlier in Matthew, Jesus says, be perfect, therefore, as your heavenly Father is perfect. Interestingly, the Greek word translated as perfect is teleos. Does anybody remember what it meant? Anybody? It doesn't mean without any human flaws. It simply means, in the Greek, it meant complete or whole. So he is saying, be whole, be complete, like your Father in heaven is complete. He is telling us that God absolutely is love, pure and unconditional, and created in the image of the divine, we too are love. God is always true to God's spiritual nature, but when we hold anger and hatred in our hearts, we are not being true to ours. It's also been said, it's a very common saying, that forgiveness is the gate to the kingdom of heaven. So when we allow our minds and hearts to be hardened with non-forgiveness, we close the gate. Spirit never closes the gate. We close the gate. And like Da Vinci, we create a barrier in our consciousness that blocks the creative flow. Desmond Tutu says, forgiveness is the only way to heal ourselves and be free from the past. I'm going to say that one more time, and I'm going to ask you to repeat it with me. Forgiveness is the only way to heal ourselves and be free from the past. Together, forgiveness is the only way to heal ourselves and be free from the past. The Book of Joy is full of stories about what we might consider to be extreme, take your breath away forgiveness. One example is a mother whose precious child was lured into a booby trap and killed by those working with the apartheid system. She one day turned on her TV and saw her son's body being dragged through the street by the perpetrators. Horrible, horrible. And when the young man who betrayed her son and other sons of other mothers stood before them and asked for forgiveness, first, this mother took off her shoe and threw it at the young man. Understandable human reaction. But then eventually, she approached him and said, my son, we forgive you. And we don't have to look back, and we don't have to look at this book just to see examples of this. There have been countless reports in the news about the New Zealand mosque survivors who have forgiven the shooter. One man who lost his wife said, and I quote, talking about the shooter, he is my brother. I do not support what he did. He got it horribly wrong. Maybe he was hurt. Maybe something horrible happened to him. But the bottom line is, I forgive him, and I'm sure if my dear wife were still alive, she would say the same thing. Now, we may hear stories of like this. I know I hear stories like this and think I'm not capable of that degree of forgiveness. It just seems to be too much, does it not? And yet, Desmond Tutu says, we all have the capacity to be instruments of incredible compassion, love, and forgiveness because we are all one in perfect divine love. Also in the book, a young boy named Jack writes to the Dalai Lama saying, I have the utmost respect for your undying message of kindness and forgiveness. Yet, I wonder, can you forgive China for all the harm and pain they caused you and your people? Compelling question coming out of a young boy. His next question is, do they deserve it? And here's the Dalai Lama's response. He says, when the spontaneous protests began in Tibet, I deliberately tried to keep compassion and a sense of concern for the Chinese hardliners. I tried to take in their anger, their fear into myself, and give back love and forgiveness. Often we talk about cultivating compassion for someone who's a victim, but we also need to hold compassion for those who inflict the pain, for they are creating the conditions for their own suffering. And later he says, obviously no human being was born to be cruel or to harm others, but because of certain circumstances, some react in horrific behavior. And as we sit and think of different causes, we see that if we are really angry, we must be angry at the causes. Ultimately, people's anger, ignorance, and narrow-mindedness, and feel compassion and pity for them. Now, of course, forgiveness is a personal choice that we all must make for ourselves. And if you have worked or are working now on an issue of forgiveness, you know that sometimes it can be really hard. Has anyone found that to be the case besides me? I hope so. I'm not alone here. It has been said that forgiveness is like peeling an onion in the way that sometimes it has many layers. And we peel and we peel and we think we're finished, and then all of a sudden it seems like a layer appears that we didn't know was there. And also, sometimes in order to have enough courage to pick up that onion, we know we're going to have to cry, don't we? Sometimes I avoid it. He's up there, he'll turn off my sound. I ask my husband to do it. I don't like to peel onions, okay? I have struggled in my own life with this, and as I said, I'm sure we all have. I think we all have. My dear mother, who I loved with all my heart, one time when I was, years ago before Bob and I were married, looked at me and said, Jan, I don't think Bob really loves you. I think he's only courting you, or whatever the word was she used in her older-fashioned language. He's looking for a mother for those kids. That's what she said. Well, you know, it took me a long time to peel that onion. It took me years to peel that onion. I knew it wasn't true. I didn't want to take it in my heart, but it just that she would think that really hurt me. At the time, do you know what I heard? I heard from my own mother, well, you must not be lovable enough. That's what I took into my heart. Now I look back and I think my father had just died. That comment came from her own pain, her own grief, her own fear that if I took on a new family, somehow she might not be part of it. So I think, you know, it's important for us to tell our stories about forgiveness and to share them with each other because I think all of us deal with it. And maybe one of the reasons that forgiveness is so hard, according to Dalai Lama and Desmond Tutu, is that we hold lots of misconceptions about it. For example, we think sometimes that forgiveness is not, that forgiveness, in other words, we think that forgiveness is a sign of weakness, and truly it is not. Forgiveness is anything but a sign of weakness. It takes strength to let go of our resentments. It has been said, I know you've all heard this, that holding on to resentment is like taking poison and expecting what? the other person to die. That's exactly right. And Desmond Tutu and his daughter, Mapilo Tutu, explain in a book I'm going to show you a little bit later called The Book of Forgiving. They say, without forgiveness, we remain tethered to the person who harmed us. We are bound by chains of bitterness, tied together, trapped together. Until we forgive the person who harmed us, that person will hold the key to our freedom. Now, Nelson Mandela famously said, and this is quoted in the book, "As I walked out the door toward the gates that would lead to my freedom, I knew if I didn't leave my bitterness and hatred behind, I would still be in prison." Forgiveness is not a sign of weakness. It is a sign of strength. It takes courage and power to become your own liberator. Unlike the old adage, forgiveness also does not mean forgetting. If I'd forgotten my story about my mom, I couldn't tell it to you today, could I? Obviously, I haven't forgotten. I've forgiven it, but I haven't forgotten it. We don't really ever actually forget, I think. We tend to look back with a different perspective. Remember, perspective was our first pillar. We see it differently. It has been said that forgiveness is selective remembering, a conscious decision to focus on love and let the rest go. We can always look back at past events, and I know we often do, to consider what we've learned from them and how we might move forward smarter and stronger. And finally, forgiveness does not mean approving of wrongdoing or allowing hurtful behavior to continue. It can mean that we actually seek justice. It's the consciousness in which we seek it that is the difference. The Dalai Lama chose not to react to his Chinese oppressors in anger and hatred, yet he has spent his entire life since then working against the Chinese occupation. And he will continue to do that until the Tibetan people can live in dignity and freedom. He says, we must make an important distinction between the actor and the action. I think that's profound. An important distinction between the actor and the action, between the person and what he or she has done. We can condemn the act and the contributing factors, but the power of forgiveness lies in not losing sight of the humanity of the person. From our higher mind, in unity we would say from our place of divinity, our Christ within, we realize that hate and resentment are not helpful in the long term or the short term. It was Gandhi who famously said, "An eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth makes the world blind and toothless." And that's all it does, okay? And we always have a choice. We can choose revenge or we can choose forgiveness and set ourselves free. In Matthew, during the Sermon on the Mount again, Jesus talks about this when he says, "If someone strikes you on the cheek, turn the other cheek to him also." Now here, Jesus rejects revenge and retaliation, but do we think Jesus meant for us to endure physical abuse? I don't think so. That wasn't Jesus. Metaphysically, turning the other cheek means turning away from the conflict to a higher form of energy. When we forgive, we acknowledge that someone may have done something destructive, that we may have been hurt, but we make the choice to respond from that higher nature, to turn to the power of the divine within, and to give back positive, affirmative energy. We give back light for darkness. We give back love for hate. We give back harmony for discord. Charles Fillmore actually defined forgiveness as the process of giving up the false for the true. To forgive, he said, some mental form of energy must be transformed. And as you know, or I should say, I believe that as wonderful as this book is, this chapter on forgiveness is, there's something missing from it. And I think that something missing from it is the whole idea of this verse. What does Jesus tell us about love your enemy? Love your enemy as what? Yourself, okay? So, love your enemy as yourself. If we listen to that voice of our inner critic, reminding us of our past failures, our faults, our shortcomings, if we constantly dwell on past mistakes and hold on to self guilt. It's time to release all that and let it go. It's time to remember who and what we are. We are more than what we have said. We are more than what we have done or left undone. We are more than what we have felt. Each one of us is an individualized expression of the divine. Forgiving others rests on loving and forgiving ourselves first. So Archbishop Tutu has become one of the world's leading spokespersons today on forgiveness. After chairing the Truth and Reconciliation Commission in South Africa, he has helped people all over the world to use truth, forgiveness, and reconciliation. And he writes that when a hurt or harm happens, it's a point of choice. We can enter the endless cycle of resentment that just goes around and around and around, or we can enter the healing cycle of forgiveness. So at the end of the book, for those of you who have the book, at the end of the Book of Joy, I should say, not this book, Douglas Abrams notes that while most spiritual leaders are adamant about the importance of forgiveness, few talk about how to do it. Did you ever notice that? Everybody says, oh, it's a good thing, but you know, where's our process? How do we do it? Well, there are a few of them out there. But in another book, which is on the screen here, The Book of Forgiving, this was written by Desmond Tutu and his daughter Mapito Tutu, they actually give a process to follow for forgiveness. Now, you can find this process in the back of the book under the practices, pages 335 and 336, or you can find it, it's on the screen. You can join the Global Forgiveness Challenge at forgivenesschallenge.com. I did that. You get powerful little short daily emails about forgiveness. It's just really powerful. So I'm going to share the four-step process with you now, and then we're going to take it into meditation. So here is the four-step process. First of all, they say it's very important in telling your story. All forgiveness must begin, they say, by facing the truth. You can write your story down in a journal, or you can share it with a trusted friend, but it's important to get your story out. Secondly, what is important is naming the hurt. Facts are facts, but experiences can hold strong emotion and pain for us. And it's important to name them. It's important to say what they are. This is actually also at the point that you ask yourself if you want to continue carrying that feeling and that pain, or if you would like to release it and set yourself free. This leads us to granting forgiveness. There's a chapter on each one of these in this book, the Book of Forgiving. This leads to granting forgiveness. The ability to forgive comes from the recognition of our shared humanity and the understanding that in our human skins we hurt and are hurt by one another. And most people, I truly believe, hurt others out of their own pain, their own needs, and their own suffering. That's where all that horrible behavior comes from. And the last one is really important and often neglected in books of forgiveness, and that is, they call it, renewing or releasing. How many of you have had an issue with a loved one or a friend, worked through the issue, forgiven that person, and then made the decision that you needed to release that person from your life? Is anybody willing to share that they've done that? I have. Sometimes that's what we need to do. We bless them and we let them go, and we hold our own spiritual consciousness around them. So in the end, it's important for us to realize that our only adversary about forgiveness is in our own consciousness. Jesus taught the words you see every time you walk into this building, if you come in the front door, you shall know the truth, and the truth shall what? Set you free. And the truth is that as spiritual beings, we can never really be diminished by anyone else. We are whole and we are complete. In this human experience, sometimes we simply don't know the weight of something that we've been carrying for years. And one of the most courageous decisions we will ever make is to let go of what is hurting our own soul. So I invite each one of us today to ask ourselves, am I willing to let go of resentments Am I willing to let go of hatred? Am I willing to forgive in order to live a life of freedom and joy? And so let's take a moment now to take that in as we begin our prayer and meditation. For those of you who are here for the first time, this is printed in your bulletin. It's something that is said in Unity churches throughout the world. Let's say it together. There is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life. God, the good, omnipotent, and so it is.
There's a holy hush around us as God's glory fills the place. I've touched the hem of his garment. I can almost see his face, and my heart is overflowing with the fullness of his joy. I know without a doubt that I've been with the Lord. Surely the presence of the Lord is in this place. I can feel his mighty power and his grace. I can feel the brush of angel wings. I see glory on each face. Surely the presence of the Lord is in this place.